둘, 셋, 파!
Borahe Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Consequence Podcast Network. This is In Defense of Ska. Our mission is to document the ska scene from its traditional roots through until its emergence as a global diverse genre. The influence of ska resonates through your favorite bands and artists in ways you might have missed. I'm your co-host, Adam D. of Omnigon and Asian Man Records band, Link 80. Joining me is your host, Aaron Carnes, renowned author of the book In Defense of Ska, which is currently available in its expanded second edition.
All right, today I want to talk about the Beatles.
All right.
Yeah, you know, famed ska band, the Beatles.
One of the first pieces of music I had in my house as a kid was like the greatest hits of the Beatles. Just, you know, my parents didn't have a ton of music in the house, but that was one of the things that I listened to. What was your favorite Beatles song?
For me, I don't know if I can name a favorite song, but definitely the White Album's my favorite album because for some reason I didn't have a lot of experience with the Beatles when I was younger. I just knew their early pop hits, and I didn't know that they went experimental in the second half of their career. So when I was in my early 20s, I started listening to the White Album, and I was like, oh my God, I had no idea. Mm. This is why everyone worships the Beatles, because they just reinvented themselves over and over and over and over again. So I'm full on team Beatles. Yeah.
Right. Well, it was like they could do both.
Yeah, and the early pop stuff is so good too. It helped me appreciate that stuff too.
Yeah, that tape that I had, the first half was kind of the pop stuff, and then the second half was when they grew their hair out. And I remember my parents would be like, "Oh, we don't listen to the long-haired Beatles stuff."
I think religious family, you and I both. I think I had the same vibe with my mom about the long-haired Beatles stuff too. So that's hilarious.
Yeah.
So there was a song on the White Album. They got some crazy stuff on the White Album, you know, like the Revolution 9, which is tape noise and everything. But there is a ska song on that record too.
Oh, yeah.
Ubla Dee Ubla Da. I think everyone knows this song. It's a pretty popular song.
Yeah.
Last year, we had a Bad Manners trumpet player, Paul Hyman, on the show. And it came up a little bit, some ska connections to that song that maybe people don't realize or aren't as aware of. So I think we're going to dive a little deeper into this topic.
Yeah.
Although, first off, you know, I it's probably not necessary, but let's just give a little background on the Beatles.
Yeah, do it.
Yeah. Four-piece band, started in Liverpool, England in 1960. They had their first hit in 1962 with the song Love Me Do. The Beatles charted on the Hot 100 64 times between the years of 1964 and 1970. 20 of those were number one hits. Interestingly, though, Ubla Dee charted in several countries in the late 60s, but not the US or the UK. But apparently, it charted in the US in 1976, hitting number 49. Now, here's the thing. This is not an Ubla Dee episode, because the Beatles experimented with ska and reggae more than once. So we're going to talk about every known moment of Beatles experimenting with ska and reggae on this episode today. And to do that, we brought on two Beatles-obsessed ska musicians.
So without any further ado, let's join our guests now and introduce them to the listeners.
So who do we have here today?
My name is Jay. Jay Nugent. I play guitar with the Slackers, and I DJ a lot, and I grew up on the Beatles. My dad had a copy of Help going back to the 60s. You know, I was born in the early 70s, but he had an old copy of Help. And sorry to start with like a deep, heavy memory, but the first time I ever saw my mother cry was her waking us up like 6 a.m. in whatever, 1981, the morning after John Lennon had been murdered. And I was already aware of the Beatles and I'm vaguely aware, but I had no idea that they were like that important to my mom in particular. My dad wasn't really a Beatles fan, even though he had Help. But my mom was of that generation, born in 43. So she was like 20 when the Beatles blew up, 20, 21. So she's like Beatles generation. So she was literally in tears when John Lennon was assassinated. So that's like a really deep, heavy memory for me. So like the Beatles are almost kind of like family members in a weird way, like they are to a lot of people.
Follow that.
Yeah. yeah, my name is Jorge. I play guitar in a band called The Loving Poppers and spend a good amount of time in a band called The Pie Tasters. And I too worship at the altar of the Beatles, grew up with it from my parents. In fact, I have props. I don't have a mom crying story, but I do have my parents. My parents also born 43, 42. This is an Argentine, my parents pressing of Please Please Me. It says, Por favor, yo, which is like you sort of lose the pun of Please Please Me there because it just says, Por favor. This is, but yeah, I mean, just like my whole life, the Beatles, it's all I've ever known, you know, and they're sort of my my North Star in terms of all culture, any, like, if I'm reading about, you know, the moon landing, I'm like, the Beatles were here when this happened. If I'm reading about anything, you know, like, you know, 14th century medieval, whatever the hook, I'm always like, the Beatles. Were the Beatles in relationship to anything and everything? Because they are like, they are it for me.
It's like BC and AD. It's like pre-Beatles, you know.
Exactly. And full disclosure, I probably am, I should acknowledge, like, I'm a Paul guy. I'm probably a Paul apologist. I'm a Paulologist, and I love them all. But because of, like, you know, John becomes St. John in 1980, and then Paul is, like, you know, everyone, for, like, only recently has Paul not been, like, you know, considered like universally like a corny fucking guy or whatever. Like now everyone gets it that Paul is the shit. But like my whole life I was like defending Paul. So like you're probably everything I say you should, you know, understand that it's like, and that under that lens of.
It's Paul centric.
Paul centric. I love Paul.
Yeah.
Yes. And I love them all.
You have a very polarized. Yeah. You there. Sorry, I got a lot there. I got a lot of puns with Paul over here.
Oh man, yeah, that's they're built in with that name, Paul. It's there's a lot of places you could go with that. But yes,
Jorge, you left out one band credit.
Which one?
Decepticons.
Oh yeah, Decons. Also, is in the Decepticons, which are like super important band that came. hold on,
directly
a second.
Related to the Beatles.
20 years after the Beatles.
Yeah,
exactly.
The Beatles walked so the Decons could fly.
Exactly. I'm trying to think of when we covered the Beatles. It's almost impossible that we didn't at some point, or at least like do some, you know, because again, it was like, actually, no, there's very specific Beatles ripoffs. We'll move on, but yes. Moving right along.
Move on.
I too have come to worship at the altar of Beatles, but I like Jay, I have an exact opposite story of Jay. I have like
your mother was like cackling with joy when he was killed.
No, well, okay, not the direct opposite, but more it's more like my parents were not interested in music pretty much as I grew up. And They didn't listen to, I'm sure they knew Beatles because they grew up during the Beatles era, but they didn't care about it. And so I understood Beatles as Love Me Do and Hard Day's Night. It wasn't until I was like out of high school where somebody gave me the White Album, because I was always like, why is everybody always raving about the Beatles? I didn't realize that, I didn't even know anything about the late 60s Beatles until I was like, you know, 19 or 20 or something. And then I realized I got it. Oh, this band changed music.
Yeah, definitely. Everything that's happened after them is definitely affected by them. And then that's not even just limited to music, honestly. But I can understand how people might not be feeling the Beatles because it's just like, you know, rammed down your throat your whole life or whatever. But like, you have to have respect at the very least, like, you know, for what they achieved and how they changed the game.
So they absorbed everything around them, I think. And so in this particular conversation, we're going to hone in on how they absorbed reggae, ska, Jamaican music, and how we see little traces of it in their music. So what generally, to your knowledge, was their relationship to this music during their run?
Well, I want to know, do you hate the Beatles? You must, right? You're just over there quietly hating on the Beatles. Were you happy when John was killed? Do you have a well-thumbed copy of
Adam, what's your take on the Beatles?
Right, you're a Hinckley guy. You're a Paul guy. He's a Hinckley guy or whatever. Is that Hinckley? No, Chapman, Mark David Chapman.
No, Mark David Chapman. Yeah.
Sorry. I get my assassins, my early 80s assassins, so confused.
Yeah.
No, I like the Beatles. Kind of like Aaron. My parents only like the early stuff. We had like a cassette copy of the greatest hits in my house that I think we bought at a flea market that I'm pretty sure was bootleg. And my parents didn't like the B side of the tape because they didn't like when the band grew their hair out. Which those are the good songs. Code for Drugs.
Got weird.
Oh, yeah. The drugs.
My mom too was a little like,
that's the George W. Bush position or whatever, that they got weird.
Yeah. And then when my kids were really young, I went down kind of a Beatles rabbit hole, just like watching a bunch of videos on YouTube when I was like hanging out with my infant son. And yeah, I like the Beatles a lot.
Fair. Okay. Then that's fine. Then that's fine. That's acceptable. Yes.
Yeah, except okay, we can have this conversation. So Jorge, what was the Beatles' relationship to ska and reggae, and did the members have different feelings towards it?
I know that, well, just when you consider the timeline of the Beatles, in 63 they're like basically taking over England, 64 mm-hmm. early 64 they come here, so like really, you know, what's going on in ska in that era, that's, you know, that's kind of like that's kind of a big era really for it, you know what I mean? I think by the time they start, can I talk about a song, actually, a specific song they do?
Yeah, let's just jump right into a specific song.
So then this song, I Call Your Name, it's actually a song that John wrote pre-Beatles, actually probably in the late 50s, before the Beatles were even a thing. Kind of
Quarrymen?
Yeah, I think even pre-Quarrymen, possibly. I mean, I've read a lot about it. It's, you know, just like everything, there's a lot of different... takes on exactly, supposedly right when he switched from a banjo to a guitar, so like skiffle, he's skiffling his nuts off and he writes this song.
So you're saying he went, am I allowed to do this right here? You know where I'm going with this.
I don't know, but I'm sitting, hold on, let me hold on to my balls. All right, go ahead.
He went from skiffle to ska full. Is that allowed? Can we do it? Man, Adam is not having that, man. He was like, please end this interview, man. Can we please talk about something else?
No.
Sorry, I derailed that. God damn it.
So he wrote this tune. And then like, I guess when they were like, you know, having to put out like a million fucking records a year, they're like, he's like, I got this tune. And when he originally wrote it, it was sort of like a, if I'm allowed to do this, I don't know.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, here we go. It's just kind of like a R&B rock. I call your name, but you're not there, you know, kind of like Beatles kind of, but, and then it had like a solo in the middle, like you put in the middle of an R&B. Rock song, but they recorded it March 1st, 1964, and so they were like, "Well, let's put this new music." And then, like, if you see a lot of like the headlines from that era, they're like, this is ska the new sensation? Is it, you know, just like, I'm sure you would see an article about reggaeton or whatever fucking music. I don't know that's happening now from any other land, you know?
So you're saying this was like the rap break in, you know, like the middle of like, this is like the, for our generation would be like, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s, they had to kind of put a rap break in like every pop tune or something. So you would say it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, like how, yeah, like how Mbop by Hanson has like record scratches on it. That's exactly what I'm talking.
Right. So they weren't like, wow, we're paying homage to this classic old music because it was brand new music. This is like the dance shit the kids are listening to. So let's put a ska section in there.
I do, though. I don't think it was like done in, I think they were feeling it too. Now, I will say that like, so the song is, you know, trotting along and all of a sudden it slightly slows down. Paul starts walking a little bit. John starts, you know, with the skanks, with the chops. If I can say, maybe not so eloquently, you know, it's, you know, it's kind of white for a better way, but not just that it's white. It's all, it's just like sort of lumbering and literally heavy handed, you know. John, George is playing a 12.
I mean, it's got
a 12 string solo that does not, do, you know. I don't know. I think it's, I think it is, I think they're doing it because they like it. Because, you know, if you watch, this is the era of A Hard Day's Night, right? So they're like, which is probably their most, the record that is most influenced by Black American culture in terms of like, there's a lot of girl group stuff on it. I mean, and if you see that movie when there's the scene where Ringo's like dancing to I Want to Be Your Man in the clubs, and it's clearly just them at a club just getting wasted on like, I guess rum and cokes and speed or whatever they're on at that point. I don't think they've hit weed yet, actually. You know? But anyway, so, you know, and like I'm sure they're just at the clubs at the Bag of Nails or whatever, and they're just like listening to what's going on, and like DJs are playing ska music because that's like, it's this new crazy sound from Jamaica.
Yeah, I think it's clear from the history they like stuck with it. It wasn't like, oh, let's put a dubstep break in the tune, and then 5-10 years later they're like, oh god, what do we do, you know, like they like were clearly into Jamaican music, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And actually that same song, I Call Your Name, which was released on the Long Tall Sally EP, because we don't have to get into that anyway, they gave it to Billy J. Kramer and the Dakotas, who everyone knows. I know you guys love that band.
Mersey, they were a Mersey side band or what?
I don't honestly remember. I confuse them with the, what's his name? Fun. I confuse all the Jerry and the pit, you know, but the point is that in his version, they don't go ska. They just go more like conventional, like, you know, bluesy solo.
And nobody talks about, nobody's doing a podcast about the Billy J. Kramer version. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly. So this is why we're here today. Yeah.
So for people who don't know a ton about ska from the 60s, in 1964, the most significant thing in terms of pop culture that happens is My Boy Lollipop by Millie Small. That's the song that gets onto radio. It gets outside of sort of like the ska fans, or, you know, the Jamaican immigrants or the skinheads or whatever. I guess that's a little before skinheads, but you know what I mean? This is where it kind of reaches a more mainstream.
Yeah. It was a bona fide like hit. That was an actual hit song.
I checked out with our friends at Wikipedia. So, you know, this is about to be really good. What I'm about to say. And they say, and again, March 1st is confirmed that the Beatles recorded this song. And it says My Boy Lollipop, the Millie Smalls version, was released on quote, either February or March of 1964. That's what Wikipedia says.
People talk about like how short attention spans are now. And I got to say, shit moved faster back then because we didn't have YouTube and we didn't have archiving and all this shit where we could save culture and like linger on it forever. A tune came out, it was on the radio in the shops, and then it was gone. There was no way to hear it again. There was no MTV even to play it or anything like that. So actually, tunes came out and bands did covers of pop tunes right away. And you could get a fucking record pressed in days. So like if somebody had a hit on one Friday, you could get your version out the next Friday. So things actually moved a lot faster back then. And I think that's a very cool thing. There was an immediacy to it. You couldn't linger on it. You had to like hit it and quit it, you know? And I now it's like shit takes too long now, even with digital shit, right. It actually should be quicker and everything takes longer.
But to that point, actually Bluebeat, the label Bluebeat, the ska label from England, had already put out by that point of March 1st, had already released more than 200 singles.
Wow.
Prince Buster holds the like Guinness Book of World Records record for most records put out in a year. Like not SoundCloud shit, but actual like records. He like put out something like two a week. I forget in what year or something. I don't know. Could somebody check this? Wow. I may be wrong by now, but like at least in the 90s or whatever, that was the record. The guy put out an insane amount of music.
Aaron, I sent you that clip where John Lennon is being interviewed by Tom Snyder in the mid-70s, and he's asking him what he likes, you know, what music do you like?
And he liked the English Beat or something, right?
No, he says he likes disco. This isn't, he's like, I like disco. And he's like, he's like, reggae. Oh, I'm sure you'll put the fucking clip here.
I like the thing that happened in Jamaica called reggae. There's a music in Jamaica called reggae, which has been around for years under the disguise of ska, bluebeat, et cetera, but it finally formed itself into reggae. And that's about the really newest thing that's happened in music in the last 5 years.
So, and I'll spare you the accent, although I'm really dying. I have more of a Ringo accent.
I wish you wouldn't, because...
In the chamber. I got a Ringo in the chamber. But,
yes.
But he's like, yeah, he says reggae music is probably the newest thing that's happened in the last 5 years. And it was known as ska under the guise of ska or bluebeat or something like that. So like they were definitely listening to it and they definitely thought it was like cool.
Yeah.
And like what's about to happen is Paul is about to smoke weed like forever, nonstop, all the time. And that's certainly not going to help. They're not going to hurt his love of Jamaican music.
No.
So this is the first instance of them dabbling with ska. Do you know what the very next instance is?
Depends on like if we want to talk about what was released. There's really like three major instances of them in the Beatle era, like recording and releasing. We can talk about Obla Di Obla Da, which is like the big one, you know. Mm-hmm. And that is a Paul song. And I think, shall we Obla Di Obla Da, or should we go into it? You were into it on the.
Is that the next one they recorded?
Yeah, well, that's on the White Album. Okay, the other one is on You Know My Name, Look Up the Number, which is actually a song they started recording in 1967, but wasn't released until 1970 as the B-side of Let It Be, like their final. And the reason for that is that it was a... do you guys know that song at all? It's like kind of like a song fragment that John wrote kind of as a goof. You know, John loves the Goons and fucking Peter Sellers and, you know, he's like proto Python John-ness or whatever. So it's like, you know my name, look up the number, you know my name, and you know my name. He does, it's just that over and over again. And they take that like song fragment and play it like several different genres and just kind of like smash, put it together. It's actually quite a, I think it actually kind of holds up in a lot of ways.
I don't know that one.
And the version that was on the single for Let It Be, the original version, does not have the ska part on it, which actually came out with the anthology. I don't know how well you guys know the anthologies. In the mid-90s, they released the Beatles anthologies, which had like, you know, a lot of demos and studio outtakes, shit like that. And within that has the full You Know My Name, Look Up the Number. And the first version, it goes into like, you know my name, and like they're singing sort of in this like clip way that like you can tell. I mean, again, I don't know this for certain, but to my ear, it sounds like he's trying to do a Millie Small like impression, you know. And actually, there's saxophone on that, and that saxophone is played by, well, you don't know because you don't know the song, but anyone? Brian Jones of the Rolling Stones is playing sax badly on it.
Really?
Okay.
And this is like, this is Brian Jones near the end. Brian Jones, like, he's a total pariah. Like, Mick and Keith want nothing. They don't want him at the studio anymore. Like, so he's just like, he shows up. And, you know, there's a lot of like
bad showing up on sax. Beatles records. You know, he really, yeah, exactly. You know, it's not like he traded down. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, exactly. He's playing the like Rolando Alfonso. You know, the like, upbeat
fuck
part.
You guys, I'm going with the Beatles, man.
He probably, I mean, I can't even imagine how stoked he was to tell them that. But you know, in the Bowie played sax really badly. You know, Van Morrison plays terrible sax. Like, a lot of those, like,
I mean, who plays good sax? You know, it's like Coltrane and a couple other guys. You know, it's like
Tim Capella.
I feel like so many of those, like, the, you know, like, sax was like a thing back then. You know, and they're like, no offense to Dave, to your boy Dave, but just like bad sax by skinny British people, like. Pretty white, skinny British people with bad teeth. But anyway, I digress. Anyway, Brian Jones is playing sax on that. So, but you should check that too now, because it's good. And actually, in the 80s, in more than one interview, Paul, and I just call him Paul because, you know, he's my guy.
It's your boy.
Sir Paul. You, all right, man.
Sir Paul was asked, like, his favorite Beatles tune. And he named, you know, my name, look up the number. Now, it's probably, like, due to, like, I don't know, you know, he was feeling.
Got to do what he wanted on that, you know.
Well, not so much that, it's just that he was feeling, it was a good time. Like, you can tell they're having fun making it, basically.
Right, right.
So, and that's kind of what he says about it, too. Like, it's not necessarily their best record, but, like, for him, it's like, he'll listen to it, and he's like, man, that was a fun record to make. And again, they made it, like, over a span of 3 years until they finally were like, okay, I guess this. Apparently, George thought it was just a throwaway for the Christmas albums.
By the way, talking about back to the like immediacy of music back then, 3 years was like epic. Like when everyone talked about, yeah. Like Pink Floyd took 3 years to make Dark Side of the Moon. Like,
yeah,
fucking slackers take like 4 years to make a record, and it's like ska. You know, it's like sorry, we can edit that out, right? Anyway,
I think back to you with that.
No, we're keeping
can
that.
We leave with it?
Yeah,
it shouldn't take that long, you know.
Yeah, well, so anyway, that's a sentimental. I think Paul is just being sentimental, Paul.
Plus, the whole everybody in the studio started skanking.
Yeah, I heard that. That's true. George Martin was fucking. He was just fucking power skanking his balls off,
cutting a rug.
Yeah, his tie was flying like this.
Yeah.
In Defense of Ska will return in a moment.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Back to I Call Your Name, which is the first track we talked about that actually had the ska section in it, which is like the first Beatles foray into ska.
Uh-huh.
And I, like a couple of years ago, I mentioned on some thread on Facebook or something, somebody, you know, probably Chopa in Puerto Rico was probably talking about something. And like, I happened to mention that, like, oh, well, the Beatles actually played ska like in the ska year, like in the year ska broke. And so, like, the Beatles are by default like more ska than anybody, you know, in any, you know, non-Jamaican artist, you know, and people right. Fucking were not having that, man. They were like so angry. They were like, no, fuck the Beatles. They don't know shit about ska and whatever. I was like, I don't know. They were up on ska way before you, man. Like literally, according to Jorge, like a week after ska came out, they were covering ska.
This is a smoking hot take.
Yeah.
I think, I'm going to stick with that take. The Beatles are more ska than you.
The Beatles are more ska than you.
Yeah, quote me on that. Yes. That could be your tagline. The Beatles are more ska than you.
I think that'll be the tagline. That'll be how we promote the episode.
Yeah.
I think so.
You need something, you know.
Let's jump to Obla Di Obla Da.
Oh, fucking Obla Di. Well, Jimmy Scott, I don't know if, who I guess played percussion and Bad Manners. I don't I like a charismatic, by all accounts, Nigerian percussionist who had like, who was famous for his like catchphrases. Mm-hmm. And I guess he and the Beatles and Paul were fucking in the clubs, fucking full Austin Power, swinging London, fucking, again, the Bag of Nails is where I always want to imagine everyone at. And yeah, I guess Obla Di Obla Da is an expression that, okay, I wrote this down. I'm going to try to say this. Urobo language from Nigeria. I'm sorry if I said that wrong. I rolled the R a little bit to try to give it like a little bit of like, you know, mm-hmm. credibility from the Wadi people. I don't know. You can write that down in the bottom. But anyway, so Paul took this expression and wrote the song around it. And then Jimmy was like, well, give me some fucking loot for that, because that's my expression. And yeah. Paul's like, but it's just an expression. Like, if you write a song called like A Penny Saved is a Penny Earned, like, and I taught you a penny saved is a penny earned, you don't fucking get money, you know. And anyway, that's the argument. I guess Jimmy Scott said, well, no, it wasn't really an expression. I don't know. You know, it's sort of a little bit weird there, but apparently he got in trouble with the law. Jimmy Scott did, or for whatever reason, he was in jail, and he told the police, called the Beatles, like literally, says it called the Beatles. So Paul was like, "I'll take care of this, but this is fucking my song. It's enough, okay, bro. It's just an expression."
Did Paul drop a dime on him? I think it's a conspiracy theory. I'm gonna go like he wanted him off his back. Paul dropped a dime on him, got him clinked. It was like, "Oh, I got you off the hook, man. The song is mine, right?" That's what I'm going with. I'm going with that.
I like it. Okay, Paul. Yeah, Paul fucking put a bag on him for sure.
And I love Paul. I love Paul.
You fucking better, bro. You better fucking check your tone.
I saw that. Paul was the only Beatle I saw live, and he was awesome.
Yeah. So Desmond, you know, Desmond has a barrel. So the idea being Desmond Dekker or whatever. Now, my understanding, and I tried to find this. I really did. Maybe I made this up. I thought the original was Desmond and Millie, not Desmond and Molly.
Right.
That's fucking even more ska.
I've heard that too. Yeah, I don't remember where I read it.
But I think that might just be like ska whispers, because I was like, I'm pretty sure it's true, but then ska whispers. I couldn't find it online. So
this starts with Jimmy, the expression, the saying, whatever. Do you know why? Has Paul ever discussed why it came out as ska?
Well, that's an interesting question, because it's like also it's like, Nigeria isn't Jamaica. A lot of people don't know, especially when, particularly white people. that's harder to explain away. No, I don't know. I guess it was just like boomerish, like close enough. Black people are black people. I don't know.
Your knowledge, he's never spoken on it. Okay.
I think it's the same reason that on I Love Lucy, they're playing Brazilian songs to represent Cuba. Like, I think it's just like some white laziness or some shit. And it's just like, it's foreign. It's close enough.
So a side note, I didn't know the detail you included. So I heard some anecdote, which you would probably already know. Sometime in the 70s, Paul is recording in Nigeria.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And Fela Kuti, like the father of Afrobeat, hears that Paul is like recording in Lagos and like gets his crew and like rolls up into the studio and is like, "Hey, you're here. You're like stealing our music.
Yeah, yeah.
You're stealing Afrobeat and whatever." And like Paul's like, no. We just like Nigeria. Probably there's weed and other things going on.
Yeah, yeah.
So he invites Fela to like hang out and he plays him the record. He's like, "Look, we're not making an Afrobeat record." So he probably already had a bad reputation from your man right there. And is that's not the same Jimmy Scott. That's not
That's not Jimmy Scott, the singer, the jazz singer that had
from the jazz club. Okay, because there's a famous club in London called Jimmy Scott's that even the Rolling Stones.
Well, there's also Jimmy Scott. Like I believe there was something where he like had some. He didn't like fully grow or something, so he was almost like a castrati in his voice or something. The Jimmy Scott, the,
not a Chick Webb thing, where he was just not that tall.
No, I think I don't think it was that. No, yeah. By the way, the song that Paul was recording or the album was Band on the Run when he was in Lagos.
Oh, right.
So can you imagine? Like he's like he thinks he's gonna hear.
There's confirmation.
He thinks he's gonna hear fucking. you know, some fella jams and fucking.
And it's like
inside these four. Yeah, I mean.
But he's also probably like, all right, let's go back to my studio and record Band on the Run. You know.
Yeah, I'm sure he did. I'm sure he tried to get in there somehow. Try to get some of that Paul mojo. Fucking, you know, it took 42 hours to record Obladi Oblada. Like this is like ground zero of. You know, Paul has a bad rep as being sort of a taskmaster, or at least like
Maxwell Silverhammer.
Yeah, this is pre-Maxwell, but like Maxwell is like the next level. But this is like the first Maxwell, where like they recorded and recorded, and like then actually on the anthology, there's a version of Obladi Oblada with Jimmy Scott playing bongos on it. It's a bit more like acoustic-y, you know, it's not quite so pronounced in the Jamaican direction or whatever. And then he was like, that's not good enough. It's not how I hear. First of all, fuck everyone, okay? If Paul wants to do fucking 42 hours to do a song that we're going to listen to for the rest of, you know.
Is it 42 hours, like, actually tracking the rhythm, like Phil Spector style, like 70 takes? Or is it, like, 10 hours here, then come in next week, and let's fuck with it some more, and then...
No, I don't think it was consecutive, but it was, like, I think, not, like, 42 straight hours, but almost. Virtually 42 straight hours. Yes, actually, I have a book here because I like reading books. Oh, here's one right here. This is the Jeff Emmerich's book, the engineer.
Yeah. Sorry, we're gonna ruin your podcast right here. No Scott person is gonna have any interest in this discussion.
No. Listen, no. Check this out.
Me and Jorge will sit here like for hours, 42 hours, discussing like session.
Paul had a pound of weed up his ass.
What microphone did they use on the piano? Like,
no, this is more about how they're all mad at him. They all fucking hate Paul at this point. This is like Beatles are already like fucking Yoko's in the picture. Fucking they can't stand each other. Like,
so is Yoko a reaction to Paul?
I shouldn't have said the Y word, bro.
We're going there. Let's do it. So is John like, all right, bro, you want to go fucking 42 hours for this tune? I'm going to see that, and I'm going to go 42 years.
No, but the response to the 42 hours is Revolution, which then John is like, well, I'm going to do my fucking song. We're going to do versions of my song, which is Revolution, which has the acoustic version, you know. So it's just like games, these like power games. But Jeff...
I don't know any...
Jeff Emmerich says that John is like totally manic at this point. This is recording Obladi Oblada. One moment he'd be into it, acting the fool and doing his fake Jamaican patois. The next minute he'd be sulking and grumbling about how the song was more of Paul's granny music shit. So yeah.
what's the granny music shit mean?
I want a clip of Lennon doing patois.
Dude, it's all over. It's all over the records. He does it all the time. The granny music shit is When I'm 64, Maxwell. See, I always thought it was more like the music hall, you know, doom-can, Paul doing that. But
yeah, but that's like skiffle. That's like, you know, that John had abandoned, see? He was like into it, and then Paul got back to skiffle. He was bringing it back.
I was surprised John lumped Obladi. I mean, I thought granny music was more about a feel than about, you know what I mean? Like, I thought granny music had to have that sort of like oompa-ish, fucking imagine a bunch of British people with bad teeth playing piano around.
So Lennon, people are going to fucking freak out when I say it. They're not really, because nobody, none of this matters, but
no one cares. Yeah. If this is a ska podcast about the Beatles, no one's listening.
Lennon is considered like the hippie.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, maybe George is or whatever, but Lennon was kind of a punk, you know, cause he has tunes like Serve Yourself.
Mm-hmm.
and, you know, like Helter Skelter. Wait,
that's that Paul.
Paul. That's John, Paul, right? John. Yeah. Paul. All right, but whatever.
Forget that
but
one.
But he was kind of the angry guy. Lennon was the angry guy.
Yeah.
You think of Paul, the pop guy, as the granny music guy, you know? And it's funny that, like, Paul wanted to make, Lennon wanted to make, like, angry music, I think, at this point, no?
Well, yeah, I think, but even before, like, John is at home, married with Cynthia, fucking getting fat. Am I allowed to say that? That's what he says, so I can say that. While Paul is in, you know, swinging London with all the avant-garde motherfuckers, you know? Anyway, yeah. we've lost everyone.
But
okay.
But no, he was living at that time, whatever, but he was living with like his girlfriend and her parents.
Oh, yeah.
Or something like that. So what I'm getting at, which I just realized, was there actually, if Paul was like the reggae guy, and Lennon was the proto-punk, were the Beatles the first ska punk band?
Whoa.
I think that can't be denied. I mean,
Quote me on that. I'm going to stick by that.
The Beatles are more ska punk than you.
All right. I think that's the other quote to promote the episode.
On top, this is another hypothesis. This is another, on top of Paul dropping a dime on Jimmy Scott, I think this is another conspiracy we should investigate.
Do you guys know the story? But you know, the often told story by Paul, because Paul has, like, you know, just like the rest of us, 20 stories, but except it's Paul. So we've, I'm like, oh, he's going to tell this story again. About the beginning of Obladi Oblada, how John, you know, they're fucking at each other's throats, basically. And then John is like, this is how it should go, or whatever. And then he just goes, then they're going to end, you know, and then that's the version that's on there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't. Anyway, I'm going to the fucking book again, because Mr. Jeff Emmerich says that John left angry as shit and he came back and he said, I'm fucking stoned. I am more stoned than you have ever been. In fact, I am more stoned than you will ever be. And then he says, and this is how the song should fucking go. Unsteadily, he lurched down the stairs and over to the piano and began smashing the keys with all his might, pounding out the famous opening chords. Sir. So basically, the fucking ska broke up the Beatles, bro. Not Yoko. Ska broke up the Beatles.
Ska broke up the Beatles. Wow.
Wow. That's a fucking take.
That's the fucking...
That is a take
right there. Now, so... This is a pretty well, like, pretty well loved Beatles song, right?
Well covered.
I think so. It's like bubblegum. It's bubblegum. It's fucking. It's a banger, dude. I mean, it's like, if you don't like it, what's wrong with you? I don't know. I think it's just like, it's bubblegum reggae, really.
Yeah. Is this before or after they started using the term cod reggae?
I don't know. Actually, that's a good question.
Okay.
Cod reggae.
Are you not familiar with cod reggae?
Wait, what? Like codfish?
Fill us in on cod reggae, Aaron.
That's a whole other episode. Cod reggae is a term in England that's kind of means like white reggae.
Oh, I never heard that. But I'm like, I'm glad to be associated with codfish at any time.
No, it's not. It's not like what you guys do is not cod reggae. It's kind of purposefully kind of white, very white sounding.
I'm going to bring back cod reggae. I'm bringing back, like, I'm recolonizing cod reggae.
It's like, a little bit more on the minstrel.
Like, that's the fourth wave right there, is the cod reggae revival. It's like Blue-Eyed Soul, but
yeah,
not even soulful.
Is there any other artists in the 60s, any other like white British artists that are doing a song as overtly ska as this at this time period?
Think about that.
What a Georgie Fame. What did he do? He was a big, he's still around and he does like totally blue beat tunes.
Yeah.
But that's like a almost bossa nova tune. But yeah, no, he was like kind of borderline in and out of that kind of blue beat scene,
and he actually did it really well too, by the way.
Yeah, no, he's like a Jamaican music like fanatic. Yeah,
I don't know the word, because like even on Island Records, it's not like Spencer Davis Group was doing it or anything, so I don't know. I mean, not even like, not that anyone's as big as the Beatles in at all in any way, but I don't think there's any. I think later, you know, like the Stones, obviously.
There is, like, they were not nearly as big, and they're West Indian, but the Equals.
Oh, yeah, the Eagles,
some of the
for sure.
Band members were white English guys, but they moonlighted as the 4Gs or the West Indians and made these like awesome rock steady records from 67 on.
That's, is that Eddie Grant?
Eddie Grant, Derv Gordon, Lincoln Gordon. Yeah. And You know, so they're also like the contemporaries of the Beatles, but not nearly as big, but they had some hits.
I mean, like everyone with the Beatles scraps, like they wouldn't let Paul release Obladi Oblada because like it was like, you know, for all the fucking power plays going on. So Marmalade, the band Marmalade, had a number one hit with it.
In the 60s?
Yeah, like in the air. Like
there was a New York band in the early 90s called Marmalade. They were like a jam band.
No, it was if it's them, I don't know. I don't know. But no, I don't think.
No,
so.
I don't think it wasn't them. Yeah. And really, after they had all the, that's crazy. The Beatles still had to deal with all that bullshit, even though they had like a stack of fucking giant hits.
Life's not fair, man. Poor Paul. Poor fucking Paul.
You think, you know?
Do you know about like the Lee Perry with Paul in the 70s? You know about all this?
With what, the Linda tune, Sugar in the Morning, which is actually kind of a cool tune.
I mean, the track is amazing.
I mean, look, the backing track is cool.
Yeah, the backing track is like any Black Ark track. It's a warbly, you know. It sounds like any Black Ark. And then Linda on top. We love Linda, but anyway, yeah. So it's not great. But you know about the letter, sir? I have here a letter that Lee Perry wrote. You know when Paul got arrested in Japan for trying to sneak weed into Japan in 1980. You guys know about this?
Yeah.
So Lee Perry, who had just recorded Linda, I guess in 79, wrote a letter to the fucking Minister of Justice of Japan. And it says, this is the letter. It says, Ark of the Covenant, 5 Cardiff Crescent Drive, Kingston, Jamaica, Air White Smoke Signal, Earth Moon Base, Judah Only Law House, Israel Lighthouse. Dear sirs, I, Lee Pipecock Jackson Perry, would love to express my concern over your consideration of 1/4 kilo to be an excessive amount of herbs in the case as it pertains to Master Paul McCartney. As a creator of nature's love, light, life, and all things under the creation sun, positive feelings through songs, good times, and no problems, I find the herbal powers of marijuana and its widely recognized abilities to relax, calm, and generate positive feeling a must. Herbs is His Majesty's... Oh, that's just a sentence, actually. Herbs is His Majesty's. All singers, positive directions, and liberty irations. Please do not consider the amount of herbs involved excessive. Master Paul McCartney's intentions are positive. Baby Blue Green Star Pipecock Jackson Lee Scratch Perry Banana I Pen Ja Nature Love Defender.
I'm sure that helped. You know that.
So there's that.
Yeah, Exhibit A.
What about do you know the song Ringo did? And his there's this song called, I have it written here because it's called Waiting for the Tide to Turn. It's from his 2021 EP, Zoom In. You guys have that, right? You got that new Ringo EP? I don't wanna wait so long. I've been waiting from the break of dawn. I've been waiting so long for the tide to turn.
I have a Ringo reference from Beatles canon where he is playing reggae, which I supplied in the that list I sent to you. It's at the very bottom. So Ringo is demoing. It's in the Get Back 9-hour shit around hour 7 or something. You know, anything goes at this point. So Ringo is demoing Octopus's Garden. He apparently like goes to like the south of France or Sardinia on like Peter Sellers' yacht. You know, when he leaves the Beatles for like a minute and he goes swimming and he sees like an octopus or something and he comes up with Octopus's Garden. Just the chorus. He doesn't have the bridge, which George writes. He's demoing the tune because everybody storms, like Paul and John storm out of the room. They're going to get tea and scowl at each other in the cafeteria and be secretly recorded, probably by Jeff Emmerich. But, so it's just Ringo and George, and Ringo goes and plays the tune, and you hear him playing the tune, and as he's playing it, you clearly hear and see on the film him playing a reggae bubble to Octopus's Garden.
Hmm.
That's one of my, like, Beatles Easter eggs. That, to me, that's like the reggae beat, and this is 69, so, like, the reggae beat is, like, in the Beatles. They're hearing tunes just as reggae.
Right, right.
And you, this is where you splice in the clip of that if the Beatles
peace and love, peace
artist
and love.
Rights hit team doesn't assassinate you beforehand, you know. But anyway, that's my story with Ringo and reggae.
Well, I want to say more about his awesome song from 2021 called...
Yes, please.
It's actually quite bad. It sounds like AI, like if you fed Bob Marley Legend to an AI machine and it came out with like just generic minor key reggae and then just put Ringo, and go, peace and love on top of it.
So it's like every other reggae festival? Oh, sorry.
It's pretty much that, except imagine Ringo on it. But just like half the reggae songs on earth, he's referencing reggae in it. And he name checks Burning Spear, Bob Marley. You guys are familiar with Bob Marley?
Yeah.
And Toots and the Maytals. So please, everyone go check that out. It's a must.
And the Slackers.
And the Slackers and the Decepticons.
And the Decepticons.
And Link 80.
And Flat Planet. Let's get us all in there.
And Flat Planet, yes. Hey, Jay, do you know, the Scorsese George Harrison documentary, the what is it?
Material World. Yeah, I haven't seen it, but go ahead. I'm going to agree with whatever you say.
There's a him live in 1974 playing "What Is Life," you know, the song from All Things. What is my? And it's like.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then it goes to the verse, and George's voice is like wrecked from the tour, but it's basically a reggae verse. He's wearing, it's 70s as fuck. He's wearing like overalls and like this yellow getup. It's fucking great.
Yeah, man. I like the way, yeah, some people got sharp in the 70s and like. Yeah, man, he went full just overalls, like he's living on a farm,
yeah.
Like he's in canned heat all of a sudden or something, you know. Like
it's definitely like Sesame Street-ish in the garb. But that's like, he kind of, like, oh, actually, do you know the song? Oh, fuck, I don't even know the one. Crackerbox Palace off 33 and a Third. It's terrible. It's 70s fucking,
no.
It's not great. But it's again, it's like kind of reggae, but it's sort of like, you know, it's kind of like Clapton bad reggae or whatever. It's something kind of off about it.
Oh, man. Speaking of which, another anecdote, which I'm sure is widely known. So like apparently 74, 75 or something like that. Bob Marley had already released I Shot the Sheriff and Eric Clapton had done his version of it. Big hit. And Jamaican radio stations were actually playing the Eric Clapton version. And this is before Bob Marley blew up. So this is probably... I don't know, 73, 74, like just before he really blows up. And he actually got a bunch of his guys, you know, probably like actual killers, and like went around to the radio station and was like, how come you're playing the Eric Clapton version of my song and you're not playing my version of it? So that was the reference. That was another.
Wow.
That was a follow-up anecdote, in case you were wondering what the point of that story was. Well, it derailed the conversation yet again.
Thank you for listening to In Defense of Ska. To support the show, sign up for our Patreon. Intro and outro music by Slow Gherkin from the EP Lives. Additional music by Dan P. and the Bricks. Please rate and review the podcast and tell a friend. Follow @InDefenseOfSka on social media. The book In Defense of Ska by Aaron Carnes is available from Clash Books. Order it online. Chris Reeves of SPI is our editor. This is your co-host, Adam Davis of Omnigon, leaving you by saying Ska now more than ever.
Ooh-blah-dee, ooh-blah-da. Hey, Aaron, when I was touring with Link 80, we played in Liverpool, and we played at the Cavern Club.
Oh.
Where the Beatles started out.
Wow. You guys are basically the Beatles.
No, tell that story right now, Aaron. I'm going to tell it behind the curtain over on our Patreon.
Oh, shit.
How they can access that.
We also have a lot more conversation with... Jorge and Jay. We talked a lot more about Beatles.
Yeah. But you're going to want to hear my story.
Yeah. I wanted to bring a little interesting factoid into this conversation here at the end, since I didn't get to say it at the intro, but
okay.
we did an interview with Kyle Kinane many years ago in this podcast, and he was in a ska band many years ago, and they were called Ska Beatles, but it was spelled out like Ska Beatles.
Ska Beatles.
And this is our Ska Beatles episode, but no Kyle Kinane.
Damn, really fucked up.
What a shame. We'll talk about that more in the Patreon. So drop that $5 or more and join us.
See you there.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.